paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's time for our Draft Outlook segment brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by Apple Collision Centers. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports. Ryan, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
We're doing really well. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. And, Ryan, we've talked a lot this week about some moves that have been made in the NFL ahead of the draft. And now that the 49ers have moved up to the number three overall pick, lots of people may be putting Mac Jones as the target for the 49ers. When you evaluate Mac Jones out of Alabama, what stands out to you and how likely do you think it is that maybe that's the route the 49ers go after this recent movement?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been talking up Mac Jones since late in the college football season, and mostly to sideways looks from media folks. They were having trouble understanding it. But I was just talking to folks in the league, and they were saying at the time, NFL teams like Mac Jones a lot, like top 10 like him. And this was back in late December. And you see Mac Jones playing, like, okay, this guy looks like a game manager. He's not particularly athletic. I always joke that he looks like a 40-year-old guy taking his kids to soccer practice. He doesn't look like a finely tuned athlete. And you stand him up next to Justin Fields, you stand him up next to Trevor Lawrence, and it's like looking at two different animals. But when you watch him play, he's incredibly consistent. He's incredibly smart. He knows where to go with the ball. He is rarely fooled. Yes, you can argue he played behind a fantastic offensive line. Yes, you can argue that he played with all those first-round picks at wide receiver. But here's the thing, so did Tua. And a year ago, no one was having that conversation about Tua. Everyone's like, oh, he's going to be a top-five pick unless the hip is a concern. And I think we have to go with the physical appearance of Mac Jones and the goofiness that Mac Jones sometimes portrays when he's talking to the media. But the level at which he understands football and the things he's able to do, don't be fooled by the goofy smile. And I think that's what Kyle Shanahan potentially loves a lot about his game. You could say he reminds you of Kirk Cousins a little bit in terms of the way he plays. He's better than Kirk Cousins. But don't forget, Kyle Shanahan desperately wanted Kirk Cousins after they parted ways in Washington. He wanted him out in San Francisco. He obviously didn't work out with Jimmy G. But that, to me, is an indication of maybe the direction they're leaning. They could very easily go with Justin Fields there or Trey Lance. But I think in terms of having a high floor and very few concerns about just busting, like an RG3, for example, who for various reasons didn't work out after year one in Washington where Kyle Shanahan was there, I think that Mac Jones makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly put. You know, the floor, you might feel better with him. Of course, I'm watching Justin Fields, and not just like stumbling and still running a 4.4, which, you know, that's great. It's not the most important thing about playing quarterback, but I'm also watching him throw the ball yesterday, and I feel like his ceiling. I don't know. I've been a big fan of Justin Fields for a while, but I feel like he's getting a little bit overlooked right now for what he could be in this league. Or am I off base on that, Ryan?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right from the perspective of the media seems to be overlooking them. But NFL teams, again, like the area scouts have been doing their work on all these guys for over a year, obviously. And then the GMs get involved later in the game. So I think sometimes when you hear comments in January about Mac Jones from GMs, they're not as in the weeds on these players as the area scouts are. And that sort of changes. And I think that's the process we're going through now. I think Justin Fields is a fantastic talent. And this is what I always say about him. Like, Mac Jones only has 17 career starts because of Tua, obviously. Justin Fields only played 2 years. And one of the years was the 2020 season, which was stop-start in the Big Ten. They started late. They were the COVID games that got pushed back. And he hasn't played a ton of football. And if you go back to 2019 season, year two for Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence didn't start out great as a sophomore. There were some struggles, and to the point where we were concerned that, okay, maybe he isn't this perfect robotic out-of-the-laboratory quarterback. He does, in fact, have problems at times, but he overcame those in year three, and now we're no longer talking about it. And I think the thing with Justin Fields is once he gets to year three, which will be in the NFL, he will be a completely different player in terms of the experience, in terms of the ability to go through his progressions, in terms of the decision-making that he is right now. And you just have to understand that. The problem is, in today's NFL, when you're a top 15 pick, you're going to play right away. There's no room for you to sit on the bench, right or wrong. But I think certainly someone like Trey Lance, who only has 17 career starts at FCS level, someone like Justin Fields, if those guys had an opportunity to sit on the bench for a year or even 2 months, that would be great for their development. We'll see if it happens. But I think Justin Fields just confirmed with that pro day where he looked like he was throwing the football 150 miles an hour and with touch and accurately and can run the 4.4 that you mentioned. He's going to be a good player. I just think it's a matter of finding the right fit and and understanding it as a fan and even as someone in the front office. You have to be patient with some of these young players who aren't fully developed yet.
Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Ryan, it's interesting, like looking at the top part of this draft as far as the wide receivers are concerned. Ja'Marr Chase, a popular name, he's having his pro day at LSU right now. Devontae Smith, obviously winning the Heisman Trophy, and Jalen Waddle as well. When you look at those three players specifically, who do you like the most heading into the NFL between those three guys?
Ja'Marr Chase, I like just, and these guys are all tightly wound together here. But Ja'Marr Chase, even though he opted out, and you know sometimes we don't remember players who are insanely good only because they haven't played recently, and that sort of feels like Ja'Marr Chase. I think he'll change people's minds, or at least remind them today at his pro day. But he was the best skill position player on that 2019 LSU team that included Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Justin Jefferson, who had 1,400 yards last year for the Vikings. Joe Burrow obviously was the first overall pick and had a lot to do with that, but Ja'Marr Chase is special. He can play outside, he can play inside, he's incredibly strong at the catch point. I don't think he'll run a 4.4. He very well might, and that's great. But his game isn't necessarily just blowing past people, but he always finds ways to create separation. And he's so much stronger than he looks on paper. You watch him play, and then he's just manhandling people. He reminds me sort of a much faster version of Anquan Boldin, whose physicality. Devontae Smith is 170 pounds. He says that's what he plays at. That's what he weighed at his pro day a few weeks ago. That's what he is. And the issue, of course, is durability. But Devontae Smith's never been injured. He had a couple soft tissue injuries at Alabama early in his career, but that had nothing to do with the fact that he was slight of frame. Excuse me, I'm getting so excited talking about these receivers. And Jalen Waddle is an absolute burner. I think Jalen Waddle is better than Henry Ruggs was coming out last year. Henry Ruggs was the first wide receiver taken. He ran 4.27, I believe Henry did, at the combine. I don't think Jalen ran because he's still overcoming an ankle injury, but he's a four-down player because he gives you something to return game. And when he came out there for the national championship game, he was hobbling around and still the fastest player on the team. So he is explosive. The issue is that the injury history, and he's 5'10", and you know we talked about Devontae's frame being slight. Jalen's not a bulked-up guy. He's going to be smaller, but you have to understand that. And if you find ways to use him, it's going to transform the way your offense works. So all three of those guys are top 12, top 15 picks to me. Just a matter of when the quarterbacks go and then when some of those offensive linemen go off the board will determine where the wide receivers is going.
So locally around here for the Titans at 22, a lot of interest, especially if they're signing a Bud Dupree, and maybe a receiver or a corner. I know one guy who was very good at his pro day was J.C. Horn. You got Caleb Farley with the back thing, which I don't know if that affects him in this draft or not. Patrick Surtain up there. You've got guys like Greg Newsom. How do you view the corner group? How would you tier it? And do you think a guy like a J.C. Horn could at this point be there for the Titans at 22?
Yeah, I don't know if J.C. Horn will make it that far. He is big. He's 6'1", I think, is what he came in at. He had a really good pro day. His dad's obviously Joe Horn. But more importantly, he had a fantastic season in South Carolina. He's extremely physical. He shut down Seth Williams, the wide receiver from Auburn, when they played during the fall. And Seth Williams is going to be playing on Sundays. So I'm not sure if he slips up far. But you mentioned Caleb Farley. That's going to be interesting. He was my cornerback one until the back injury popped up. It's the second time he's had that procedure. And I was talking to someone in the league about it, and they said, yeah, I'm very concerned about that because you're now going from a top 10 pick to how concerned are you about this back? It's happened before. Can you trust it? And is he going to fall into the bottom of the first round? Is he going to even fall to the second round? So NFL teams will have to figure out how much this impacts them personally, but I think it's going to have an impact certainly on where he lands. He's not going to want to go top 10 to the Cowboys, for example. So he could be there. So then it becomes, okay, how do the Titans feel about Caleb Farley's back? Is it a big deal? Is it not a big deal? Because he's incredibly athletic, and he has a chance to be the best of this group. Patrick Surtain feels like the most sure thing. He's not quite the athlete, quote-unquote, as Caleb Farley, but he does so many things well. Greg Newsome had a fantastic season at Northwestern. He could be there around the 22 range. It'll be interesting for Greg Newsome. Tyson Campbell out of Georgia I'm higher on than most people, but I think he hit the point around two. Kelvin Joseph is a kid to watch out for from Kentucky, who also had a really good season. He transferred from LSU. And then there's Asante Samuel Jr., whose dad played for the Patriots for the longest time. He's undersized at 5'10", but he plays much bigger than that. He compared himself to J.R. Alexander, and I think that's actually a good comparison. So if you, as the Titans, want to move on from finding another edge rusher opposite Bud Dupree, then I think there are going to be two or three or four even cornerbacks there that you get at the bottom of the first round that you could roll out there immediately and make that defense better.
And Ryan, last thing for you here, if they do stick with edge rusher, a guy that we've talked about a lot here on the show has been Azeez Ojulari out of Georgia, and your latest mock draft at CBS Sports, that's who you've got the Titans taking at number 22. What stands out to you about Ojulari coming out of Georgia? What kind of a pro do you think he could be?
So the thing about this edge class, there's no Nick or Joey Bosa, there's no Chase Young. There are a lot of guys with huge upsides in terms of athleticism or strength or speed. Azeez Ojulari is the closest to a complete player at this point among this edge rush class. He's 249, but he plays much bigger than that. He's incredibly stout against the run. He has great pass rush moves. He uses hands really well. He's quick off the snap in terms of being a pass rusher. And he's the complete, as close to the complete package that you could have right now when some of these other guys are going to be projections. Quiddy Pay, I like a lot out of Michigan, but he's continuing to grow into this role. Jalen Phillips has an injury history. Greg Rousseau out of Miami also, he opted out last year, so you're sort of doing that projection, and he's a converted wide receiver. So there are guys that are all bottom of the first round talents. It's probably when they're going to go off the board, but I think Azeez Ojulari is the closest to the finished product. Can step in right away, and him off the Bud Dupree sounds like a recipe to, you know, double the incredibly low sack total that the Titans had last year, and that feels like a step in the right direction.
Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexha. Ryan, really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Ryan Wilson, you can check out his work at CBS Sports. And that was our Draft Outlook segment brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by Apple Collision Centers. When we come back, we'll continue to discuss the draft for the Tennessee Titans. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, and ask the question, what are the most important positions for the Titans to hit on in the late round of the draft? We'll talk about it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking the draft and all things Tennessee Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So we had Ryan Wilson on from CBS Sports in our last segment for our Draft Outlook segment brought to you by Apple Collision Center and by Farm Bureau Health Plans. And it's interesting now, Joe, because I think a lot of us here locally have kind of moved on to cornerback being taken in the first round with the departures of Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson. But as I said, Ryan's got the Titans selecting Azeez Ojulari in the first round. And I do feel like some of the discussion here that started off as, hey, the Titans, no matter what, in the first round, they're going with an edge rusher. Then you bring in Bud Dupree, Nico Autry in the fold as well. And maybe you feel like that's a little bit less of a priority. But I do think, like, if the draft breaks the right way and J.C. Horn's not there, maybe Greg Newsome's not there either, and you feel like an edge rusher is the best player available left on your board. We've talked about the balance that John Robinson has of balancing a need and the best player available. I still think edge rusher absolutely is a possibility in the first round of the draft.
I do, too. Jared and I had a very nice, friendly conversation on the show about this very thing yesterday.
Very friendly.
Very, very nice. Very friendly. He didn't want to tangle. So, no, but that is something that I think is certainly that's the best available versus need conversation. But here's one something that comes up from talking to Ryan, and I hadn't thought about it too much. But what if Caleb Farley does fall to the Titans? And what if they think, like, this guy is CB1. This is the best corner in the draft.
That injury history is
concerning. Back stuff's concerning.
Yeah.
Like it's, but we do know that John Robinson will
– he likes to draft injured players.
Draft and sign in free agency.
Yes.
He will do it. So I'm just – it's an interesting one. Like, if you think he's clearly the guy, and obviously you have to feel like it's not going to be a chronic problem for him, you also may be sacrificing the impact in rookie year from him that I think the Titans need from whoever they draft at corner.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Hey, maybe I'm wrong and Kevin Johnson's going to come in and be a dynamite starting slot corner for this team, but I think they need to draft a corner who's going to start for them in 2021. And so Caleb Farley, in that way, you know, you may be costing yourself, but if you think he's the best guy, do you still take the long-term view there? And you feel like, you know, the back thing is not going to be you know, a constant problem.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot here in this process about corner, about receiver, edge rush, tight end. I mean, a lot of positions that are pretty glaringly of need for the Titans. As you look to the later rounds of the draft, and we had Jim Nagy on a couple of weeks ago talking about how you really make your living as a scout and make your living as a football team that can develop, you know, a lot of depth and really be solid in that area and stay under the salary cap. A lot of that gets done on the third day of the draft and when you're drafting in the later rounds. So as you look at the needs for the Titans and how you think this draft could unfold, what do you think are the positions that they need to hit on in the late round the most? Like when it comes to, you know, maybe some guys that could be going under the radar or position groups that maybe we have not spent enough time talking about. What are some of those that stand out to you as you look ahead to the draft for the Titans?
Okay, so the ones that we know, we all agree that they have to and they're going to take. They're going to take a receiver, they're going to take a corner, they're going to take an edge.
Yep.
I'd be shocked if those three, and a tight end.
Yeah.
Right?
Those would be
the
four.
Those are my first four in my little mock draft. Doesn't necessarily mean that those three positions are going to be addressed in those top 100 picks, but those four positions are going to be picked. I'll be stunned if any of them aren't. So, like, in my thing, I had two corners and two receivers. I did not have them taking inside linebacker, but the more I think about it, I had them taking a safety. I had them taking an offensive lineman, and I went with Alaric Jackson because, you know, if you can get an Iowa lineman, you get an Iowa lineman. He's a tackle/guard. But I did not take an inside linebacker, which I think might be a mistake, and I think that might be something they really need to look at. You know, another funny thing about this is on the mock draft front, I know our guy, Dane Brugler, early in one of his had them taking Zaven Collins, who is the Tulsa linebacker, who some people think could be also like a pass rush guy, but he's an inside linebacker who's just an all-around really terrific playmaker. Excellent players, one of the best linebackers in college football last year. But the thing is, you look at them, and it looks good. They got Jayon Brown back for this year. They have Rashawn Evans on his rookie deal. They have David Long on his rookie deal. You know, and obviously he was a later-round pick, but that could change quickly. So that's the position I look at, like, huh, I wonder. And I think a lot of the answer to that is what they actually think about Rashawn Evans and his future.
I would agree. I think this is obviously a gigantic year for Rashawn Evans, but I wonder if John Robinson and the Titans are already kind of thinking about that and looking ahead and looking forward, planning for the next couple of years here as well, when you've got a decision to make coming up on that front. Like at this point, I don't anticipate there's any way that they're picking up his fifth-year option. Like it's just not going to happen. You're talking about getting into, I think the number is around $10 million for Rashawn Evans. It's just, I don't think there's any way right now you can justify paying him that amount of money. Now, and we saw this happen with Jack Conklin as well, even though it was a little bit different of a circumstance. If Rashawn Evans comes back and plays really well this year, then you could risk losing him at that point. But I just don't see any way the Titans go about doing that at this point. I'm also interested to see what do they do at tackle in this draft, because obviously Isaiah Wilson not there anymore. You've invested a first-round pick that less than a calendar year later is gone. I think we would all agree that does not need to be a high priority for the Titans in this draft, but I am interested to see how quickly they act on offensive line. I still think that's probably a direction they'll go at some point in the draft.
Well, there's people who would argue with you on that.
There are.
I would tend to
for sure
to be on your side of that. But, I mean, you cut Dennis Kelly and you have Kendall Lamb right now.
Yep.
And I just – you have Tyson Brailo. You have David Questenberry. Those guys both did really well filling in for Luan. Luan's back. But is Tyson Brailo – is it Sombrailo and Lamb competing at right tackle and then Questenberry is the two, or is Sombrailo the swing guy? I don't know. I mean, I think you could make a case to go kind of high in this draft at OT because it's a very good draft for offensive tackles.
Yep.
But then you know, what are you sacrificing there? What are you not addressing that might be a little bit more urgent than that? So much of that depends on how you feel about those three guys, Kendall Lamb, David Questenberry, Tyson Brailo.
Are they ever going to do anything at field goal kicker? They bringing back Guskowski. Are they going to draft somebody? What are they doing?
That's a fair question. Yeah.
I mean, as far as I know, they've done nothing. Unless I just missed the re-signing of Steven Guskowski, which I don't think I did.
No. But no one else is signing him either.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I want to make sure he is unrestricted. He's not restricted. He's not an RFA, right?
No, he's unrestricted.
He's an unrestricted free agent. Nobody. I have, without looking at every team's kicking situation, the way he finished last year, I guess I would have thought maybe somebody might be kicking the tires on that.
But don't you feel like the Titans should have done that by now?
Yeah.
I just think it's weird that he's not back in the fold yet.
Is there a great kicker to draft in this draft? There's no Rodrigo Blankenship, right?
There's no Rodrigo Blankenship. There's hopefully no Roberto Aguayo.
I was about
either.
To say, what about Sebastian Janikowski? Seabass.
Yeah. Go get him.
I mean, maybe that's their plan.
To draft a kicker.
Yeah.
Didn't Janikowski go in the first round?
I don't know if he's in the first round.
I think he was
high.
The first round.
He may have been. Hey, it worked out. He was really good.
I mean,
Raiders moved to draft a kicker in the first round.
Hey, I think Lane Kiffin literally attempted a 73-yard field goal with him one time. Didn't get there.
Hey, that guy won fantasy championships for me, so I will not besmirch his name on this show.
What a kicker. Sebastian Janikowski. I bring that up because I think it's fascinating. He's not back in the fold yet. Maybe it's just a matter of time, and he will be. But I do think it's interesting that Guskowski has not been signed yet.
Yeah, no, it's a little weird. It's probably about time to do that, unless you're just not doing that.
Yeah, maybe they're not. Maybe they're going a different direction.
And when, if he signs with somewhere else.
Sam Sloman. Bring back Sam Sloman. Come on.
That maybe that's it. And if Guskowski goes somewhere else, he's going to go 31 for 32
yes,
this year for whoever that team is.
Take him in your fantasy draft, that is for sure. When we come back, we'll get back into the Predators. A big win last night for the hockey team and a big win last night for yours truly as well. We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Give me Ellie Tolvanen. Ellie Tolvanen tonight gets one on the power play finally. Give me Tolvanen. Come on. This is it. Tonight's the day.
Many doubted we'd ever see it, but here it is.
Now down the right side, breaking in, Tolvanen. He scores! Tolvanen puts it away upstairs, and the Predators win in overtime. 3-2.
The return to glory.
We got one!
Sweet, sweet victory. Not only for the Nashville Predators, we'll get to them here in just a second, but more importantly, for Robbie Stanley last night, finally, the deed has been done. I am on the board, and Preds Pick the Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. With a selection yesterday, Joe Rexrode, of Ellie Tolvanen, and he gets the game winner in overtime, and after an 0-for-21 drought this season, I am on the board in this competition. I feel like a new man today. I am energized, I am revitalized here in this competition, and I'm here to tell you, who also scored last night in Preds Pick the Click, I'm coming
but
for
whatever.
You next. Coming for you next.
All right. I like it. Bring it on. Listener 6, me 6, Porth 1, and now you 1. Okay, so here, let's ask. Let's have Elijah Campbell now producing, freaking me out with his shaved face. Freaking me out. Dude.
Total accident, too. It was just a freak accident. Just trying to trim it. Got a little too close to the sun, and had a big old patch missing of a patch of hair missing on the side of my face. So I was like, you know what? After consultation, we came to the conclusion that it was best that I just go ahead and nuke it. And I've not felt my cheeks since June.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's been a while, right?
Oh, it's been a long time.
Well, I still want you to weigh in here. I may not look at you while you talk, but I want you to weigh in. I'm gonna look this way while I talk to you, Elijah.
Face for radio.
So here's the question. So Robbie got his goal on an overtime game winner 3-on-3. Is that more, or like if he and Porth end up tied at 1, or I don't know, maybe they're tied at 7.
Yeah,
whatever it may be.
Let's not limit ourselves.
Yeah, the ceiling's the roof. So who counts more? The regular 5-on-5, I don't remember who Porth got.
Which is the point.
Yeah. Or this but some people would say, well, yeah, but 3-on-3 is easier to score. You should have to get it in the first. What would you say?
Oh, man.
I mean, maybe you're biased because right now Robbie could storm in there and smack your shaven face around.
Well, that's true. But at the same time, if I really ticked him off, I could just pot him down and turn his mic off completely. So I'm the man sitting here with the power. I'm the captain of the ship now.
This is quite a power struggle here.
This is. I'm flexing so hard underneath my jacket right now, like with all this power. But I'd say that counts more. A game winner's got to count more. If we're doing tiebreakers,
okay. All right.
I would say the tiebreaker and the poetic justice of having Robbie have to sweat one out after three periods of hockey where he still had no goal for pick to click. I think the emotional struggle there for Robbie also has to count just a little bit.
Look, we've talked about we've talked about the perseverance of this hockey team. I persevered as well through this season. This has been a battle.
This
has been a grind. Quite frankly, probably has been more impressive on my part than what the hockey team has done turning things around. I've stuck with it. Here we are. I found myself on the board here. I feel like this is the beginning of a run, much like the Predators have put together, where things start to turn around, and I'm going to go on a roll here in this competition. Perhaps my favorite part of last night, I didn't say much on Twitter last night. I was watching. I saw Roman Josi score the goal that Ili Tolvanen assisted on. They were just like, of course, Tolvanen, he's not going to even approach scoring a goal tonight. He did have one glorious chance, I believe, in the second period on a rush where they have a backdoor feed to him, and he just missed it. And I was like, of course, any other night he scores a goal there. But I didn't say anything on Twitter. And then 9:33 p.m. rolls around last night, Central Standard Time, and I tweet out, so who do you want me to select on Thursday for Preds Pick to Click? Just thinking that Predators fans fully believe at that point that I am cursed. I am the kiss of death for this hockey team. And I figured I'd start getting in names like, I don't know, David Legwand or people that don't play for this team anymore or Ryan Ellis, who's on injured reserve right now, like just things like that. 1 minute later, Ili Tolvanen finds the back of the net. I celebrate in a way that I've not celebrated in a long time, well, like it was my own personal accomplishment. I was 2.5 minutes late turning in my story to NHL.com because I was celebrating, and it was glorious. I don't regret a single second of it.
Okay, I need to know a little bit about this. So they have like a to-the-minute deadline for you?
Yeah, running deadline. As soon as the buzzer ends. You got one, and then you go and you write another one later, right through later.
Okay, yeah. So you were 2.5 minutes on your running.
Yeah.
And it's how late after the buzzer it's supposed to be in?
Like 15 seconds.
So you were 2 minutes and 45 seconds after the buzzer? Yeah. You got that in? That's 2.5 minutes late? My gosh. You have overcome adversity.
Yes, I have.
All that you've been through. Yeah, the Preds are out there. Maybe they might be lifting weights and whatever, you know, Peck is making kale shakes for everybody, but you have been in here in this studio
sweating
over who to pick to score a
That's
goal.
Right.
You know, I was going to actually advise you if it was going the way it looked like it was going to go, because we talked about the Costanza thing.
Sure.
A new approach of pick whoever you want, and then who is the opposite of that player? See, that's kind of the Costanza, the opposite of your first instinct. So I was going to bring that today as an idea, but now we can just forget about it. You're on a roll, man.
I'm on a roll, and I believe it's all downhill from here. You're going to see a lot of momentum. So if you're listening out there, I'd advise you, be tuning in tomorrow at 8:45, and be ready for my selection and Preds Pick to Click, because probably about to go on a heater here. This is one of the great accomplishments of my life to this point.
And have
Is this how you felt the whole year, just winning like this? Because I'm on cloud nine today.
Yeah, again, like you, I think you just you take life for granted. You take so many things for granted in life.
Yes.
And when you win as much as I did, I didn't appreciate it, man. So I am actually inspired by the way that you are embracing this moment.
Thank you.
It's just it's old hat to me, and I probably need to shake myself out of that a little bit.
Needs to be a constant reminder. By the way, Joe Rexrode on the board again last night. So the competition in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, currently stands as such. The listeners with six correct answers, Joe Rexrode with six correct answers, Ryan Porth and Robbie Stanley now tied at one. So Porth was, you know, talking to me the last couple of weeks as if he was just blowing people away in this competition. And here we are now tied.
Well, we've been saying it all along. Like, Porth, remember, it's one night away from being tied. So now we really see what you guys are made of.
And then on the ice, secondarily in this discussion, the Nashville Predators win last night. Their sixth win in a row. They get it done 3-2 in overtime against the Dallas Stars. I tell you what, they just continue to roll out points. They've done it in different ways. Last night, a game where they were largely dominated through the first couple of periods. They couldn't get anything going offensively. Dallas controlled the play for the most part, and that's not been the case for them as of late. The Predators have done a good job of really controlling the game. They didn't last night until the third period, where it looked like they just kicked it into a different gear, and they started to play really well. They played with speed coming through the neutral zone, and they were just relentless on the forecheck last night. They get it done, and the more time that goes by and the more points they start to pile up, the more you start to believe, I think, that this turnaround is kind of a real thing and not something where you just expect them to totally fall off the table moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's some numbers in here that are probably going to regress, and the goaltending is still got to be number one, right?
Sure.
But I thought interesting stat in Vingan. I think this story was yesterday from Vingan at theathletic.com. During the 7 out of 8 stretch going into last night's game, 2.34 forecheck chances per game, second in the NHL over that time behind the Blues, and that's up a full chance per game. So why? So that's obviously a big part of this. The forecheck looks it's wearing teams out at times.
Yep.
Like, why has it gotten so much better? Is it as simple as hard work, effort, stuff like that? It can't be that simple, right?
No, I do think a commitment is part of it, but I think it's also, John Hines talked about this a little bit last night. They've highlighted, you know, there's a way you've got to play to win. Tampa Bay plays a certain way. They win that way. Carolina, they play a certain way. They win that way. Predators really didn't have an identity earlier this season. I think part of that has been the buy-in on the forecheck and just forcing teams to make bad decisions. When you've got an offense that is limited in the ways that theirs have been, you've got to create offense in different ways. You've got to create turnovers. You've got to create odd man rushes. They've done a much better job of that as of late. So it's been fascinating to watch.
So is this kind of realizing the stated identity, though? It's not like
so.
They found this. I mean, this is what they wanted to do and
sure.
They thought they had to do. It's just a matter of, I think, buy-in's a good way to – that's a good phrase.
And you've heard John Hines bring that up a lot lately in his post-game press conferences, and he did that again last night as well. So things rolling along very smoothly right now for the Nashville Predators, and we'll continue that discussion when we come back with our weekly visit with Matt Duchene, Predator Centerman, coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrode. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Predator Centerman Matt Duchene, brought to you by Gary Ashton, Remax Advantage, and by Two Rivers Ford. Matt, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
How are you?
We are doing great, Matt. Hope you are as well. Appreciate you taking time to join us today. And yet another win for your group last night, Matt. 6 in a row. They've won 8 out of the last 9 and back in a playoff spot here in the Central Division. Just from your vantage point, watching your teammates out on the ice, what do you think's working right now? What's clicking in? I know you've not been around as much with being injured, but what do you think the vibe's like right now with this group?
Yeah, I think last night was a big win. You know, playing Dallas, it's obviously a team that we have a rivalry with, and you know, it's a physical game. It was a hard-fought game, and guys are pretty excited to get that one done. So Vibe's good. I think, you know, it's a tough time of year to get wins. And the nice thing is, with the schedule this year, you know, you're really in control of your own destiny to a certain extent, where other years you're really scoreboard watching, and it feels like every single night the wrong teams are winning. And when you get behind the eight ball, it's pretty tough to make it. So, you know, I think this year is a little different situation. The guys, obviously, you know, we talked about it all year that we needed a streak at some point to get in, and they're putting one together right now.
So, Matt, how are you doing? How's your progress? Anything, any update you can give us on your return?
Yeah, I still don't. It's been a very different kind of, you know, I thought I was really close before, and I just haven't had this injury before. And, you know, just talking to, you know, people and educating myself on it, you know, it's one of those things that it's a little unpredictable, and I'm just kind of taking it day by day right now and hoping to be back soon. It's the nice part is I'm able to skate and skate, you know, hard, and it's just not quite ready for game action yet. And I'm hoping soon. I mean, it's hard to like, there's no, it's a lose-lose scenario when you're not able to be in the lineup with the guys. You know, when you lose, you feel like maybe you could have done something to help the guys win, and whenever you win, you feel like you're missing out big time. So I've had a lot of FOMO lately with the guys winning, and you know, it's been you know, it's been tough. I mean, being hurt in pro sports is always hard. I mean, it's you live to play this game, and to a certain extent, I mean, for me, it's you know, it's such a part of who I am, and you know, it feels like, you know, it's kind of taken away from you a little bit when you're injured. So I'm so proud of the boys. So I'm over the moon watching them right now and seeing what they're doing. And you know, I hope when I get back, I can, you know, help out. And I know we got some other guys that we'd love to get back as well. And I think, you know, hopefully we get healthy at the right time.
Matt, we've talked a lot here on the show lately about the forecheck of this team being relentless and being incredibly aggressive as of late. And you don't have to lay out like exactly what's going on out there, but from your vantage point, when your forecheck is working the way it is right now for the Predators, what goes into that? Like, what are the ingredients of a good forecheck, and how much of a difference can that make in a team's overall game?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, in today's game, you know, there's so much video watched, and you know, you can get so worried about you know, having a smart F3 that's like the third forward in the zone, and that forward is kind of a safety valve to allow the D men to pinch down the wall and keep pucks in. And I found early in the year we were we were all so worried about losing that F3 and, you know, giving up odd man rushes, we weren't as aggressive on the forecheck as we should have been. It was almost like, okay, the first guy in knew he was the first forward in, but then the other two guys, instead of almost racing to be the second guy, they were both worried about being the third guy. So it was almost too much of a defense or first, or like, you know, conservative kind of attitude. And I think, you know, you still need to be responsible with that guy. I mean, that's the way the game needs to be played. But I think whenever you have F1 and F2 going as, you know, as hard as they can into the corner, and, you know, able to turn pucks over, and you get pucks back, and you keep, you know, teams in their own end. So I see the guys playing a little bit more loose that way. And when I say loose, I just mean mentally, like just not overthinking things and just, you know, really trusting each other. And a forecheck, I mean, you got to get the puck back, and you got to work for each other. F1's got to work for F2, and F2's got to work for F3. And you work as a unit. And I think earlier in the year and a lot of last year, I think that's been one of our weaknesses, is, you know, guys just not maybe trusting each other and not trusting, you know, guys are going to be where they need to be and just going hard to make things work the way they should. So, you know, it was never a work ethic thing. It was never a commitment thing. I think it was just a trust thing and a confidence thing. So I think, you know, success has bred that into our game a little bit.
So we were talking last segment, Matt, a little bit about, you know, identity with this team. You know, different teams have different ways they need to win. Do you think that some of the things you just talked about and just some of the things that have gone well during the hot streak, does that match up with, I guess, the identity that you guys envisioned for this team going into the year? Like, is this matching up with kind of how you guys were hoping to play?
I mean, yeah, that part of it for sure. I think we're an extremely talented hockey team, and I've talked about that before. You know, I think we've definitely over the last 2 years, we've definitely underachieved offensively, and that style of game. I think this team has potential to be a very explosive offensive team, and at times we are. And I think, you know, the more we play like this in terms of that aggression and, you know, just trusting each other and just playing the game and not working the game, if that makes sense. I think that will breed that type of game into us. But at the same time, you know, yeah, our production isn't there quite as much as we'd like it to be, but it's improving. And I think the big thing is watching the guys, the work ethic and the commitment to just playing hard and getting it done. We're getting great goaltending. Obviously, we've had that all year when we've been winning. And I think those things are working for us right now. If you look at the game last night, it was basically a playoff game and playoff style game. And it's the guys found a way. I mean, we're down 2-1 going in the third. Probably, you know, didn't have our best the first two periods. Still playing well, but Dallas was pretty good there. And then we took over in the third and ended up winning the game. So it's fun to watch the guys just find ways to win. And, you know, you beat Detroit 7-1. Great to see some guys have some big nights. And then you grind one out last night. So you got to win all types of ways in this league.
Matt Duchene on the line with us, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and by Two Rivers Ford. And, Matt, I've got to ask you about your captain in Roman Josi. He became tied with Mark Streit last night for the most points in NHL history by a Swiss-born player. And, look, if you've watched Roman Josi for any length of time, you know how good he is. You know how talented he is. He just won the Norris Trophy last season. But you've played a lot against him and now with him as well. From your vantage point, what separates Josi from some of the other defensemen in this league, from your view?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the elite. I mean, he proved it last year as being, you know, the best in the league last year. And that's tough to do in today's game. There's so many great, great players at every position. And I think for me, what I love about him is, I mean, there's a lot of things to love about him, but I think the one thing that I really like, and it's something that I value in teammates, and I love how much he works on his game. I think he's just a hard worker, and he's a guy who wants to be as good as he can possibly be all the time. I mean, we trained a lot together in the off season. Obviously, we had an extended off season. I got back to Nashville, you know, early fall, you know, have my second child, and he and I were doing a lot of skates, just the two of us, and the amount we were able to really push each other was always awesome. It was so much fun for me to work with someone like that, that has that intensity and that passion that I really value. And I think that's what everyone values that, I mean, in this league. But it's amazing when you see a guy that's such a great player, you know, try and get better all the time. And I think that's the one thing that I really admire the most about him, is it's just, he's never satisfied, and he always wants to keep pushing and improving. And there's no way you get to that level without being that way. And maybe some people get there on pure, you know, talent, but you don't stay there. You fall off. And this is a guy that's not going to fall off anytime soon, because he's just got it. He's got that part of it, you know, together, and it's impressive.
A guy in this lineup, Matt, who I think's been kind of taken for granted over several years, a guy who's been all over the lineup and can do just about everything, is Kalle Yarncroke. And, I mean, I know 20.4% on the shooting, maybe that's, you know, I mean, that's obviously a high number, but he just keeps producing and getting big goals and making big plays. What are you seeing from him this year?
I mean, we as players know what he's about. I know at the start of the year, you know, he got hurt early. He was on the fourth line a little bit, not looking like he was going to be a big part. He wasn't on the power play. And all of us kind of, I know he was frustrated, and he had every right to be, because he just shows what he can do. And we all kind of told him, like, Yarny, don't worry about it. Like, we all know you're going to work your way up the lineup pretty quickly and have a great season for us. And, you know, I think what's admirable about Yarny is he's just, like, he's one of my closest friends on the team, so we talk a lot. And we have, you know, pretty in-depth conversations. And for me, what I think with him is just a guy that's just committed. And he can do anything. I mean, you can play him on a fourth line, and he can be effective. You can play him on a top line, and he can be effective. You can put him anywhere on the power play. He's the Swiss Army knife of our team. And he's extremely valuable. And a guy that his sniffer on the net, his knack for goal scoring is one of the best. You know, it's at the top of the league in terms of just a guy who's a pure finisher. Is he going to lead the league in goals? Maybe not, but he's a guy who just scores. And you're seeing it right now, he just finds ways to get lost. He's not the type of player that's going to, like, you know, dazzle with the puck and, you know, have the puck a lot. He just finds ways to get open, and he finishes. I mean, and then he's extremely hardworking and great defensively, and like I said, he's a Swiss Army knife for our team. He does everything really well, and I'm so happy for him to see him doing what he's doing. And he's just a great player to have on your team.
Matt Duchesne, Predators Cinnamon, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and by Two Rivers Ford. Matt, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and continued good luck in your recovery over the next few days and weeks here as well.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Matt Duchesne joins us every week here on Robbie and Rex Road at 8:45. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Duchesne had to say there and get into a little college basketball talk as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.